weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Big thanks to the two Johnnies. It's Monday, the 18th of September, and you're listening to Game On. Coming up today, Bernard Jackman is in studio to reflect on a World Cup weekend of flying Fijians and Irish momentum.
And the man of the match performance from Bundayaki, but to score 8 tries and the manner in which the majority of those 8 tries were scored is something to be quite pleased about. Ireland winning the game by 8-1. Alternative made it 2 wins out of 2, 59-60.
In soccer, we'll have Stephen Kelly on the line to look back at the Premier League as things get tense for Ten Hag and Spurs make their very own Late Late Show.
Plus in golf, Rami Burns will tell us how Team Europe can benefit from strong showings at Wentworth. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet us at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Welcome along. I'm delighted to say that Bernard Jackman is with me in studio. How are you, Bernard?
Yeah, great, thank you.
We're going to get to you very shortly and talk about all of the rugby, but first of all, to some breaking football news. Republic of Ireland defender Diane Caldwell has strongly criticised the management of Vera Pauw, insisting that their historic run to a first ever Women's World Cup was due to the players. She spoke in a press conference today ahead of the Nations League clash with Northern Ireland at the Aviva Stadium on Sunday, and Caldwell hit out at Pauw, who wasn't offered a contract extension post-World Cup over a number of issues. Well, let's hear what Diane Caldwell had to say.
I think there are many areas that could have been better, yes, under her tenure. It's the same performance factors that I just mentioned. I think our preparation for games could have been better. Physical preparation, opponent analysis, match tactics, in-game match tactics, changes, systems of play. What was happening under Vera? I think a group of players that were destined for success came together at the right time. Well, you'd have to ask her that, but from my position as a pretty experienced player, I don't think it was up to the standard I expected at an international level. And I think the results and performances that we got were in spite of Vera being our coach. Yeah, we approached her many times about professionalising many aspects, but it was hard to get change. And, you know, she obviously made myself a part of the leadership group that she created, along with a few other players. So she gave us that position to use our voice and to try to talk on behalf of the team. And I think we tried to do that as a group the best that we could. But obviously, at the end of the day, she is the coach and she controls everything. And you only can say and try to change so much. Again, I think it was just an accumulation of everything. And over a long time, you know, after the European campaign, myself and Katie also reflected through doctor at the time about certain aspects of things that need to be improved and changed, but ultimately that fell on deaf ears and she got a contract extension. Yeah, I'm very happy that there's change. It gives us all kind of a new lease of life. There's a new beginning, and like I said, with the changes that the FAI has made with the new roles, it just shows intent, standards are going to be raised. They've listened to the stakeholders involved in this team and realised that these girls are good, but we actually can be even getting more out of them, and they can even be performing at a higher level and achieving more success than what they have been. You know, we put ourselves under tremendous scrutiny by threatening strike action. I think that was the most pressure we've ever felt as a group, because it was us out on the pitch. We had to go out there and back up everything we were asking for. So I think it's a little bit like that, you know, and I think we've grown as well with that pressure since that period of time. And now we've backed it up at results. We've shown that we can contest with the best, and that gives you an inner belief and an ability to deal with those expectations and those pressures. People not in the know will find it hard to understand and see it from our point of view, but you know, knowledge is your wealth, you know, and if you don't know these things, I think it's probably wrong to speak out and to give your opinion on things that you maybe don't have a full understanding of.
So that's Ireland player Diane Caldwell speaking today. They're playing against Northern Ireland at the weekend, so there was media. The first kind of official bit of media that we've had since the World Cup, Katie McCabe also was up for media duties today as well. She was much more measured in what she said. She said that she regrets her social media post after the perceived disagreement anyway with Vera Powell. She put up that zipped face emoji and she insisted that player power played no part in the manager's departure. And she also said that she spoke to Vera and they wished each other well and all the rest. I think we thought that after the press conference with Mark Hanum and Jonathan Hill last week, when they went through bits of the review, that that would be the end of it. And there was probably an expectation that the players would just move on. They haven't done that, though. Well, Diane Caldwell hasn't done that. She has very much laid the blame at Vera Powell's feet on those. What happened at the World Cup, the performances were okay. They just didn't get the results that they were hoping for. And I think that Ireland were hoping for lots of interesting things in her comments there. But they do tally, Ruby and Bernard, with what the FAI said last week, which was that there was a gulf in the expectation around Vera Powell's attitude to tactics, performance, way of play. And they said that a lot of it would remain confidential, but Diane has actually, she has actually shone a light on what the players think of what Vera's preparations for the World Cup. And I'd say we obviously haven't heard from Vera, and I'm sure she'll be very disappointed to hear that, because she did get the team to the World Cup. Although Diane says that the performances that Ireland got were in spite of Vera Powell being coach. Ruby?
I don't know enough about tactics, Marie, in soccer to question Diane Caldwell or question Vera Powell, so I most certainly am not. I did think it was very interesting that Katie McCabe said, "We will always be grateful for all Vera gave Irish football." So straight away you have a divide between two players and the one team as to what they're saying in the press conference. Diane Caldwell is saying it was in spite of Vera Powell, and Katie McCabe is thanking her for everything she did. So there's a big divide there. But I don't know. I found it surprising. But Vera Powell did drop Diane Caldwell, didn't she?
Diane Caldwell didn't play a lot. All right, she came on at the end of the Nigeria game, if I am being correct.
They moved Megan Connolly back to centre-back. Diane Caldwell was the one that lost out, wasn't it?
Yeah, but Diane Caldwell is in her mid-30s as well, so there wasn't, like, very few people, I think, thought that she was going to be a starter, that maybe she would get a run, but, you know, out of your four backs have been mid-30s.
Let me throw this one back at you, right, because I don't know enough about the tactics, and I would, Stoney, I did think listening to Diane was, well, player analysis, I think that's up to individuals to do the analysis too. They were there as professionals. They had a lot of time on their own hands where they could have been analysing. So that's pointing the finger. The rest of it you can say is against the coach or the manager that are in charge. But for your expectations, you're into soccer and definitely women's soccer more than I am. Did they underachieve in your eyes?
No, they didn't. Like, I didn't. Like, from looking at the teams that were going to be in their group, I wasn't really expecting them to come out with any results. I thought if they could have some good performances and they would mark their very first time at a World Cup and everything would be grand, and that's what they did. Like, Nigeria were a really good team, as we saw. Canada themselves, they were going in as one of the best teams in the world. They didn't perform. And Australia, we saw how far they got as well. So they were in a really tough group, and I was really aware of that heading into it.
Yeah, so that's what it means. When you sit down in the cold light of day and you start to reflect, this sort of sounds a little bit like the Jack Charlton era. Oh, with the team he had, he should have achieved a lot more. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. With the team he had, he achieved a lot more than anyone else ever did with an Irish team. With the team Vera Powell had, she's achieved more than any other Irish manager ever has. So, I don't know. I think when things go on, you can always look back. And I'm not throwing a stone at Diane Caldwell, but I do know from being someone that lost rides and horses, got jocked off. Mm-hmm. Bernard Jackman is standing across the studio there from you. He's been left out of teams too. Your emotions towards someone that hasn't picked you or selected you do change, Bernard Jackman.
Yeah, I'm not a massive fan of what she said today, and she was very clear that people who aren't in the bubble shouldn't make an opinion. But she's given us the right to question what she said. To be fair, by being so hard on Vera Powell, and Vera Powell was at a charity lunch I was at, and you know she spoke with as much honesty. She never threw the players under the bus. She spoke about how the FAI could have dealt with it differently, and I was very impressed by her dignity, to be fair, because it was obvious there was issues with the, with the players. So, and she's lost her contract. She did get Ireland to a World Cup for the first time ever. I'm not a massive fan of you know, slating people after. It's very, like, my understanding was there was issues around sometimes her directness, or, you know, this is the first time I've heard it, lack of professionalism, lack of understanding of tactics, you know. So it's a very big accusation. And then, you know, Katie McCabe was in the squad, and she's someone who's in the leadership group, and she said today it wasn't player power. But listening to Diane Caldwell, you know, it's very hard to feel that player power didn't play a role in it, to be honest. And I just, look, coaches get fired all the time. I don't know, I think you just got to move on. Like, it's easy to throw stones. That's what I admired about Vera Powell, is that she didn't throw stones at any of the playing squad. I thought she left with as much respect as she'd earned over the course of her time here.
It's very clear that there is a couple of sides to this story, and we're hearing bits and pieces along the way. Whether we'll ever get the full picture, who knows? But I think Bernard's right that for the good of football here now, we need to move on because it's over now. She's not still in the job. You know, if she was still in the job, fair enough. Like, there'd be a lot of time for analysing what she's done or what she didn't do. But she's gone now. They need to look to the Nations League game, because these games coming up are really important as well. So, like, they need to start getting more results now, building on the World Cup and looking to qualify for major tournaments all of the time now. And that's what you would hope and what you would expect. But again, we have a day now where it's going to be all about Vera Powell and the World Cup. We're going to hear from Katie McCabe later as well. And we'll also have Stephen Kelly on the show as well. So we'll get his reaction to all of these comments. I'm just thinking, just all the way during the week now, whatever build up we have to this game in the Aviva Stadium, the first time that the Ireland women team are playing there, it's going to be all about this and getting everyone's opinion on Vera Powell and the whole scenario. Anyway, Bernard, let's move on to the Rugby World Cup. Change tack.
No player outbursts yet.
Yes.
No one's not qualified yet. So
everybody has a happy camp, do they?
Yeah, look at it. Yeah, pretty much, to be honest. Maybe, Australia won't have today, because obviously they lost to Fiji yesterday, and that's a big setback. And it looks like Fiji are going to qualify, and it's between Wales and Australia for the other place. So, yeah, only Australia maybe have grounds, but I haven't heard any players throw Eddie Jones under the bus yet.
Just yet. But I think he kind of set it up, though, that there wasn't as much.
I think he was standing in front of the bus now before he went.
Look at apparently he's complained to World Rugby because they keep going to him in the coaching box in a at a far higher rate than the opposition coach, and every time they do, the crowd start to boo. But he's picked a young squad.
Yeah.
And he's talking about building for the Lions Tour in 2 years' time, and then obviously a home World Cup. But if he doesn't qualify out of the group, he may not be the coach to lead him there. You know, it's a massive gamble. He took a 21-year-old out half, Carter Gordon. He's the only out half in the squad. He wasn't going great, but he hooked him after 50 minutes and moved the fullback to 10. And now he only has... he needs that fullback, Ben Donaldson, to play fullback, because he doesn't have another one. And he's got to try and rebuild his confidence to play Wales on Saturday. It's going to be interesting.
We're going to hear from the head coach of Fiji in just a second. But there's a bit of an Irish connection I was reading earlier. Johnny Lacey has been working with Fiji, the famed rugby referee, and of course former Munster player, seems to have been educating them on how to come up against Tier 1 nations and the laws that need to be learned as well, which is quite an interesting connection for Ireland.
Yeah, look, I think World Rugby are putting a huge amount of money into these Tier 2 countries, even though Fiji are actually, they've passed out Australia in the rankings after that win. And part of that is access to referees, helping them make sure that their discipline improves. And they, I think they won 13 penalties against Australia yesterday. So yeah, it's a nice local link. Mm. John Lacey obviously was a professional referee, head of the referees union here, the high performance program, and over the summer he's been, you know, working hard with Fiji at training sessions.
Just pitching it in Fiji, sunning himself, yeah, chilling out.
Oh, yeah, I think he was spending more time in France than their camp, but I'm sure he'll take the old Ben Ryan, who coached Fiji to the Olympic Games, was given freedom of Fiji and a piece of land. So John Lacey might be putting an invoice in if they can go and do something special.
Okay, let's hear now from the Fijian head coach, Simon Raului.
We've got to fall into the trap of complaining about last week and what happened the last weekend. We watched that on the Monday, got that out of our system in preparation, day by day by day. How do we beat the Wallabies? And I think that's the great thing about this team. Their mindset on what's the next task is, it's a different team. It's a different Fijian team. I think this Flying Fijians is a new generation. And I think they're taking this Fiji rugby forward. So it's, yeah, you can play, look at the press, you can look at what is going on there. But it didn't really affect our preparation. We knew who we were playing, so we had to concentrate on what we do.
Simon, thank you. So Australia is a well-funded nation and team and set up. I think they've got 3 sports psychologists. They've paid a lot, you know, they've got a lot of staff going on. What has someone who's worked within both programs, can you just give an example of what it's like, how you're resourced in comparison to Australia, and what kind of an achievement it is on that kind of level?
It's there is a difference there. It's obviously with the between the developed and the developing nations, tier one, tier two, in terms of resources, but we've been very lucky with, we can't talk about sponsors, can we? So our sponsors have been very good. World Rugby's had been great support of us. We've prepared with what we've got the best we can. And I think, maybe you don't get those luxuries of the sports psychologists, but we're lucky we've got other things in terms of, we were able to bring a Tala Tala in, Reverend, who came in, who is kind of you talk about mental well-being, it's our mental well-being, being in connection with our religion, being in connection with our people, our game and campaign being geared towards important to us as Fijians. So we have those sort of things. But there is, yeah, we always want more. You want always more resources, but you have to make do with what's the best you have. I'll take more matches over resources. The more matches we get at this level, talking outside the World Cup, if Fiji can get those tier one matches more regularly, you've seen what these boys can do when they get that regular competition. I don't like to make the comparison between the two because it's 2 different programs.
So as the head coach of Fiji, Simon Raului, speaking there after their big win over Australia. How much potential does this Fijian team have, Bernard?
Massive, because they now have a set piece and a game plan that makes them harder to beat. Look, put in an unbelievable performance against Wales, but were quite porous defensively. That was much improved. They learned their lesson this week and made it very difficult for Australia to break them down. I think Simon Raului, people talk about preparation time. He's the most recent appointment as a head coach of any team in the Rugby World Cup. He's only in the job about 2 months. Fern Cotter left after disagreement with the Fijian Union. And Simon Raului has stepped up from being high-performance manager to being the head coach. And it's the first time in a long time that they've had a head coach who's from Fiji, who's played for Fiji, who understands their people. But yet he has that modern mindset because he spent most of his career in the Northern Hemisphere. So he played for Saracens, Newport, Racing 92, won a top 14 with Stade Francais as a coach. Myself and Ronan O'Gara did our pro license with him. We were the only 3 foreigners on the course. And he's a really good man. He's a good man. He's got a massive presence. You heard him talking there about faith and family. And that's what Fijians spend a huge amount of time focusing on. They have X factor. They might have the resources to have 3 sports psychologists, but there's 5 or 6 players there who are probably the highest paid in the top 50 highest paid players in the world and are properly world class. And now, as I said, they seem to have fitness, strategy and a sense of connection and purpose that a lot of people are saying now semi-final for them, but they will get better in this competition. Like they, their margin of improvement is probably greater than any other team because obviously of the limited resource they have in terms of prep. So yeah, and they're great to watch. So no, it's not a Japan beating South Africa scenario because, you know, Australia aren't what they were, and Fiji are beat England obviously in the lead up to this competition. But it's great to see a tier two country start to make big strides.
Is rugby like soccer in the sense that all the head coaches have to have pro licences?
In top 14, if you want to be in the sideline, yes, you do have to do it, yeah. Not anywhere else in the world, but France is, they love the bureaucracy in France, so there's a licence for everything, yeah.
Why would you bring three sports psychologists?
I know. Well, you're Eddie Jones. If Eddie's people. Breaking him, Ruby.
I want to work with Eddie.
No, no. Eddie has his own guy who's excluded to that. But
does he?
Yeah, he does. He has his own mentor that he had with England that he's brought in. Yeah, it's insane. It's actually, I didn't know that they had that. It's ridiculous. One message, like I think Gary Keegan, who was put up in front of the media last week, who's been working with Ireland, obviously worked with the boxers and has had huge success everywhere, worked with Dublin. He is the only sports psychologist in an Irish squad, and the most of his work is done in conjunction with Andy Farrell. So just making sure that the message is clear. And if you've got three people, you know, talking to players about the mental approach, I'm sure that it won't be aligned because, you know, they all have their own preferences and biases. So bizarre. Like that adds to the whole sideshow that Eddie Jones has kind of become.
Speaking of sideshow, he left behind him. Steve Borthwick has picked up the pieces some bit with England. They beat Japan, Bernard, but they're still not great to watch, are they?
No, look, they actually, that was one of their better performances, and some of the errors were bizarre. And like they actually, what broke the Japanese kind of resistance was a pass that hit off Joe Marler's head, and everyone stopped and thinking it was a knock on, and Courtney Laws put it down, and then they started to play with a little bit more freedom. The only thing I would say is they have some of their big name players actually finding a bit of form again. I thought Itoje was excellent. Courtney Laws is playing well. Manu Tuilagi, they've got obviously good goal kicker in George Ford. The challenge for Borthwick is, does he reintegrate Owen Farrell? And how does that combination with George Ford work? Or does Farrell come back in the team? Because effectively, in Farrell's absence, George Ford has really taken responsibility. It's a limited game plan. It's not good to watch. But the reality is, as the pressure starts to mount, if you have a four pack like England have, if you've got a goal kick in 10, if you don't take many risks, that can be hard to beat. And they're not, you couldn't fancy them winning or anything like that, but certainly they have turned a corner a little bit, and it looks like Borthwick will get out of this World Cup with his reputation somewhere intact.
Are you surprised at how limited Borthwick seems to be?
Not by him. It's just, so basically he's a disciple of Eddie Jones. He's a disciple of data and stats. The model that he used to get Leicester to win a premiership is based around numbers and data. Over the last 6 months since he got the England job, they didn't have the four pack or to bully teams, and I still don't know if they do, to be honest, but it's obviously helped them get two wins. Argentina handed them the game. It was the worst Argentina performance I think I've ever seen at a World Cup, and then last night they beat a Japan team who've gone backwards since the last World Cup, where they were obviously outstanding. So the form guide isn't great, but they're in pole position in their group, and they may, like, if you've got five or six world-class players, they're the most experienced squad in the World Cup, they can pull a big performance out of somewhere. But at the moment, you know, compared to what we're seeing with South Africa, France, Ireland, New Zealand even, you know, they look a long way off.
What about Warren Gatland? Is he scratching his head? I know we said there's not too many camps unhappy, but he can't have left his game at the weekend against Portugal and thought, yeah, we're making strides forward.
Yeah, that was an average performance. I mean, to only get a...
And they were poor against Fiji too. I mean, they were handed that one as
well. Yeah, no, absolutely. Look, I wouldn't have any great faith in either Wales or Australia. They're playing each other this weekend and the winner will go through. Like, neither of them are playing well. Gatland, I thought Dan Biggar, he got Wales over the line against Fiji. Obviously, some refereeing decisions helped them as well. And yeah, they're poor. They're Wales and England and Scotland are poor at the moment. It's France and Ireland who are setting the standard for the Six Nations teams. And yeah, it's hard to know if who'll win that game, to be honest. There's very little between Australia and Wales on form.
Okay, we're going to have a chat about Ireland in a second, but let's hear the thoughts of Paul O'Connell on that performance at the weekend. He was speaking to Michael Corcoran.
With Paul O'Connell. Paul, congratulations. As a coaching group, you'll be pleased with the win, the manner of the win, but you'll also be kind of critical of yourselves that there's still a good bit of work to do.
Oh, yeah, there's always plenty of work to do. A tricky period either side of half time where we, I suppose, got on the wrong side of the penalty count. And, you know, I've just seen last weekend in the big games when that happens, it can hurt you. And, we conceded a try off the back of it, penalty after penalty, and a yellow card, something we haven't done in a while. So, it gives us something to work on now during the week. Otherwise, it was very good. They were a real good side. They're a big side. They're very physical. They probably would have benefited from a game last week. They would have really benefited from a game last week. So, they were a little bit of an unknown quantity for us coming in this weekend. We were worried about the emotion of the whole thing for them being their first World Cup game. So. So to get the winning margin we did and to score 59 points, we're really happy.
Were you pleased with the way the lineout went tonight, considering the fact that there's a really big test coming down the track next test Saturday night?
Yeah, it was good. I think, it's just been frustrating the last few weeks. Frustrating that we haven't looked after our hookers probably as well as we could have. And I thought they were excellent today. No, I thought the boys called really well, but I thought everything... apart from one or two lineouts, everything we did was at a very high level. The drill was very good in terms of the speed across the floor, the lift, the throw. So I think when we do that, we've a good lineout. It was great, and it helped us get a good foothold into the game. Those missed lineouts at the end were poor, but overall we'd be very happy.
Paul O'Connell speaking to Michael Corcoran after Ireland's defeat of Tonga. Bernard, should he be as positive about the line-out as he is?
Yeah, look, we needed that. We needed that because it was just the area of the game that was giving us a little bit of stress, because every game there was three or four stupid decisions or miscues or lack of accuracy. So to get a 90% return rate the week before you play South Africa, the South African defensive line-out is, you could have 100% of your ball against South Africa if you want to win it at the front. So the way they defend, they block the middle and back off. All right, so what Ireland, I look back at how Ireland played against South Africa in November, Paul O'Connell was the forwards coach, they have the same forwards coach, and they haven't changed. And Ireland threw the ball over the 15-metre line quite a bit, but that invited the South African backs onto us. So it's going to be interesting how we vary things up. I think possession is key, and if you can get 100% of the ball, even if you win it at the front, that's more important than potentially risking losing a throw so that our attack can launch off a little bit further back. But everyone's saying, oh, physicality. What New South Africa bring is a kamikaze style defensive system which has holes and opportunities, but you need to be absolutely bang on to execute it. We did a couple of times against them in November. I think getting ahead of them is massive because they're not half as good having to chase a lead, but that line out will just settle everyone down. Obviously, I think Dan Sheen is due back this weekend. Finney Beelam would be able to get back off on the bench, even though he failed the HIA. 7 days is enough to get back as long as he hits all his markers. So realistically, when you look at what France have lost in terms of injuries, South Africa have lost in terms of injuries, we're in an incredibly good place with only Jack Conan potentially unavailable after two games in a World Cup and three warm-up games. So we there's no excuse for us in terms of injuries this time, and we look to be in great physical condition and also enjoying it and playing some really smart and accurate rugby.
Perna, is it too simple just to look at the line out and think, well, we won them all when Ronan Kelleher was on the pitch and we lost a couple again when he went off?
Yeah, no, it is. I think sometimes when you have late replacements, just the timing can be a little bit off. In fairness to Rob Herring, he's probably our best thrower, and Paul, Paul has done his analysis on every line out that we've thrown this year, and he realizes sometimes it's the calling a little bit. And look, we know what the thing about South Africa is, they're not unpredictable. They will do what they've done for the last 4 years. So Paul will know where the space is. We just got to execute it. And I think no matter what hooker it is, I thought Kelleher had a very good game for his first game back. He was excellent. And it'll be really interesting on what we do, because they've loved having Herring on the bench because he is that set piece type hooker. But maybe they need to be a little bit braver and go with the combination of Keller and Sheen this week, particularly because South Africa have lost their talisman in terms of Malcolm Marks. We definitely have an advantage at hooker at the moment.
When you looked at the game then as a whole, and you looked at the Irish players, a couple of big names didn't come to the fore. Maybe I thought they might. I thought Josh Glandafleer was quiet. James Ryan was quiet. Peter O'Mahony was quiet. Is that any way worrying? Those other players seem to come to the fore more than a couple of the big names.
Yeah, look at Josh Van der Fleer's form actually isn't amazing. I thought Pete's had some good games recently, but it's interesting because maybe this isn't the game to play Josh Van der Fleer. Maybe it's the game to play Peter O'Mahony at 7, Doris at 8, Tyke Byrne at 6, and Ian Henderson in the second row, just to give you a little bit of power, Joe McCarthy. So I think Josh, you'd like to see Josh find a little bit more form, for sure. I think the positives are Bundy Aki. I mean, he is, he's lighting up at the moment, and he would have went into the summer behind Robbie Henshaw, but he's clearly ahead of him now. And the way Ireland will probably want to play against South Africa, he will probably end up as first receiver a lot and having Sexton out at the back of those pods, so he's going to have a huge task in terms of being knowing when to carry, when to pass, and doing it under incredible stress with that line speed. So he is someone I think that, you know, maybe going into this World Cup we weren't sure if he'd start, but so far so good, he's been outstanding and could be a key man for us.
Where are South Africa vulnerable, do you think?
I think they're vulnerable to the high ball, to be honest. I think we're actually going to have to kick a lot, and it sounds a bit stupid because our strength is our attacking game, but you've got to box clever against South Africa. You've got to know when to keep the ball in hand and when to actually revert the pressure back to them by kicking onto their back three. Their back three are brilliant runners, but they're small and vulnerable in the air, and that's why I think Sexton is absolutely key. Gibson Park isn't a brilliant kicker, he's more of a running nine. He plays with a lot of speed, and sometimes when you play with speed, game management come second best. But I think Sexton will give us that balance to our play, and for sure we're going to have to keep ball in hand. For sure we have to find opportunities in that dog-legged defence. But if you get caught behind the gain line, that's what gives them energy. So, you know, that's when Sexton's going to have to use all his experience in terms of making sure that we have a good balance to our kicking game and our running game.
That's going to put a lot of pressure then on Hugo Keenan, James Lowe, Matt Hansen to kick and chase. Were you surprised Hugo Keenan got caught twice, maybe three times on his own chase the other night?
Yeah, very unusual for him. Absolutely, and you're right, because not just when we kick the ball to them, we're hoping that they're able to get up in the air and get it back. But if South Africa do catch it, they don't mess around. They kick it back with and snow on it. So our back three players are going to be so important in terms of deciding this victory. I think as a balance, I think James Lowe, Mac Hansen and Hugo Keenan, you know, I think we can trust them. They have been excellent over the last couple of years, and I think that they could be the key factor in deciding the game.
It's 2 weekends in now. Who's the best you've seen?
Ireland have been the best, but because we've been pretty relentless.
The opposition.
The opposition have been average, but if you look at the I would say France obviously on the first game, but then they were poor against Uruguay, and I understand why. But over the course of the two games, in terms of what Ireland could control, they have hit the ground running, and I know we played the minnows, but I think Tonga are better than we made them look, and that was down to our ability to put in a good performance. So I wouldn't change my opinion for the World Cup. I fancied Ireland, and I haven't seen anything to make me get worried about that yet.
The couple of tight calls.
Yeah.
Who's going to get the number 21 jersey? 22 jersey. Jack Crowley.
I think Jack Crowley. I know Ross did well off the bench, but I think Crowley, because he can play centre, fullback, he's a different type player than Ross Byrne. I think he's proven himself that he's a big game mentality. Helping Munster to win a URC. What he's done for Ireland has been all top drawer. And I think if Sexton was out, I think Ireland would start Ross Byrne. But for the bench, I think it's going to be Jack Crowley.
Jack Crowley on the bench. Any other call you see as tight? You're going for Ronan Keller, or not Ronan Keller, probably Dan Sheehan on the bench. Maybe he won't start. Hopefully Finlay Beelam will be back. And you're making a case for Ian Henderson, who I thought did great off the bench.
Yeah, I think so. probably four, 3 or 4 weeks ago, I looked at South Africa and I said Henderson second row, Tyburn six. But Henderson hasn't got a huge amount of minutes, but he was good against Italy in the first warm-up game, and Farrell referenced that afterwards, and he was good off the bench. That would allow Peter Mahoney to play at seven, and I think that gives us an extra line option and another dog. And because Josh isn't hitting the heights that he has been, I think Josh is the perfect selection choice for South Africa. But I'm getting a sense that maybe Farrell will go with Byrne and James Ryan as his first choice centre partnership, and go with Peter Mahoney, Caelan Doris, and Josh van der Fleer, who have been his first choice back row, and trust them to get the job done.
It'll be interesting. It'll be a good Saturday evening, anyway, Emery.
Absolutely, I can't wait for it. Building up nicely, isn't it?
Big time.
Bernard, thank you so much. You've been busy the last while, and should be busy now for the next few weeks, but thanks a million for coming.
You're busy
in
for the next hour and against the head anyway.
Yeah, true. Right, we're going to take a break. Stay with us though. We'll be hearing from Katie McCabe. Stephen Kelly will join us as well. And Ruby, while I have you, we've had a nice text in from Michael Ryan saying that it's great to hear you on this evening, and he's a big Brighton and Hove Albion fan, so we'll be talking a little bit about how impressive they were as well. It's time for a break now though.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. So Katie McCabe, as we mentioned earlier, was also out speaking to the media today, and she said she regrets a World Cup social media post regarding her disagreement with Vera Pauw, and she insists that player power played no part in the manager's departure. We're going to hear from Stephen Kelly very shortly, but first let's hear from Katie McCabe.
Yeah, look, obviously Vera has her own opinions, of course. What we were as a team, we were totally collective and together in terms of what we had to do for the entire duration of the World Cup, which was to try win matches. It was obviously a very new experience for us all, staff included, but from my point of view, I think the whole team, the whole collective done an amazing job, and it was nice to get a point on in that last game against Nigeria to finish it off. No, look, I think it's no secret, myself and Vera, as two people that want to win games, we always challenge each other. We always agree to disagree on things, but when the whistle blows and we're ready to perform for our country, we're both behind it. And yeah, we do everything we can to work and achieve winning games. And we've had a terrific four years. We've had a terrific 4 years together, and we've created history, and Vera's been very much part of that. Our first manager to ever get us to a World Cup, and we should all be proud of that. But right now, obviously, she's not here anymore, and our focus now is on the Nations League and topping the group.
No regrets, though, that
Zip Mesh emoji. Yeah, look, I guess maybe it was a bit of tongue-in-cheek at the time. On reflection, could have maybe handled it a little bit better. And yeah, there was obviously a lot of things said by the media, and people having opinions, which is absolutely fine. The way the women's game is going now, we're higher profile players. What we do will be looked at. And yeah, of course, but look, me and Vera have spoken since then a few times actually. And from my conversation with her last week, she wishes us well for this Nations League campaign and will be in support of us for that. We obviously have to respect the manager and the coaching staff's approach in the games, and we do that to our absolute 100% ability, as you can see that in the games and the performances we put in. Of course, we want to get up in the opposition's half of the pitch a bit more. Obviously, I don't know the tactics that much for this week, obviously with Eileen coming back in and new coaching staff as well. Yeah, of course, I'm an attacking player. All I want to do is attack, you know. But when you're playing at that level, we need to know how to defend. And I think we've done that really well. And yeah, it was an unfortunate result for us in that kind of the game, because we really felt we could have got something from it. And I think that was the biggest disappointing thing, going 1-0 up and not really holding the lead as best as we could. And yeah, but again, with each game, the Australia game, the Canada game, We took those positives into the Nigeria game and dominated a lot of the ball in that first half against Nigeria, and played really well, in my opinion. So, yeah, of course, hopefully we'd be maybe attacking, taking an attacking approach this week. I play left back for Arsenal. I play on that left side. As I said, it's up to Eileen and the new coaching staff to determine what way we'll be setting up for Saturday. And as I say, even with Arsenal, no matter where I play on the pitch, I'll give it 100%, of course. Yeah, it's been tough, like, not going to lie. I feel like there's, been a few unfair headlines, I would say. And this thing of Katie versus Vera, it's not a thing. As I said, we've spoken. She's wished us well, and I'll always be grateful of what Vera's given to Irish football, as well as all my teammates. The FAI conducted a review and spoke to everybody, and felt they wanted to go in a different direction from a football point of view, and we need to respect that decision. We don't make those decisions as players, as much as the player powerative narrative has been thrown around. That's not the case, and we understand how people can interpret that, the public can, but we're footballers at the end of the day. We want to talk about football, and we don't want to be talking about all this nitty-gritty going on in the media. We want to focus on training and playing games for our country, and that's what's most important to us.
So it's Katie McCabe speaking to the media today ahead of that game against Northern Ireland, which is on Saturday and is live on 2FM in a game on a special as well. So do tune in for that. Stephen Kelly joins us on the line. Stephen, it has been an interesting day from a women's football perspective. We heard from Diane Caldwell a little bit earlier, and she said that the results and performances they got were in spite of Vera Powell. Katie McCabe, give me a little bit more credit to Vera there in her interview. Thoughts on both of those women's words today from you, Stephen?
Diane's was scathing, really. I have to admit, I was reading and I was listening to it and I was going, didn't pull any punches, like saying that basically the players were able to achieve what they achieved, you know, with the manager almost holding them back to some extent. And it's based on their talent and their drive as a collective to get there, which is, you know, it's a big statement to make. And then obviously Katie's a little bit more defensive. She's a bit more collected. She knows she has a big role to play going forward with the national team. She knows there was a lot of scrutiny over the messages, how she conducted herself on the pitch that day. You know, I think even with the best will and want, players going over to the manager and telling the team, that never looks good and it always goes down bad. So, you know, I think she was trying to protect herself in that sense when it comes to that. It's kind of a bit of a minefield, isn't it, to try and go through everything and kind of see which side is right? Because on one hand, you have the girls that have still got to a World Cup for the first time ever, got a point from a game and been in every game. And that's with the tactics of the manager that they had. And then you obviously get all the grumblings and everything that's going on. The long camp and they come away and you get the impression that it's just not happy at all. And yeah, they didn't down tools for her, but off the pitch and in interviews, they were, none of them were backing her. Now they're coming out straight away and saying that, you know, that they didn't back her all. So it's so interesting, but it's going to be pressure in the next few games. And I think that's what it's going to come down to, because as a player, when this happens and it becomes, like, there's always times in games and times in managers where, you know, you hear the whole thing, oh, the players are not playing for the manager, he's lost the change room. But you rarely see people come out say that, or it's been so evident that that's happened. Whereas now this is the case and you kind of feel, what's the next process? What happens next? Who comes in charge? And do they progress and do they qualify for another major tournament? And that's when all the criticisms be labelled at them, or they'd be applauded for what they did. And it's going to be an interesting watch.
Were you ever tempted yourself to come out and slate a manager after a major tournament, Stephen?
I don't know, well, maybe.
2012, maybe?
Yeah, a few times, yeah. Now, listen, the thing is, right, as much as you may disagree with a manager, and there's been plenty of times in my career where a manager's telling me tactically what to do and I'm thinking, I don't agree with this, but I still go out and do it. Because at the end of the day, you're a manager and you want to play for them. And that's what it comes down to. It comes down to, if I don't do what he wants me to do, I will not play. And you know, that's sport, isn't it? So, and afterwards, you may have a grumbling, but you still got to a major tournament. Tactically, we probably could have played better football. We could have, you know, it's very similar. and afterwards raging that I didn't play and didn't get minutes. And that was something very different than what these girls have gone through. They're going about how they felt that they were held back by this manager in their ability to get forward. I don't really think that was the case for us. We played Spain, Italy and Croatia and we didn't go through. We probably could have put in slightly better performances, but my grumblings are the fact that I didn't play, and that's different. So yeah, as much as I'd want to come out and say, I'd still kind of held my tongue slightly, I think. But it does make for it to be, I think, the firm eye of the media are going to be firmly fixed on them for the next few games and campaign, just because they've invited a bit more scrutiny on themselves based on how their performance levels, if they're going to improve.
So if you're in camp tonight, are you looking across the dining room at the Ann Caldwell and thinking, you just heap some pressure on us, or are you standing behind her saying, well done?
I think they're all standing behind her, because I get the impression, well, from the only reason, the only way I can go off is I've met a few of the girls and I've worked with RTE and they seem like a great bunch. And the only thing you can go off is their interviews during the tournament. Remember when we had all that, there was like six girls were interviewed and they all were asked to back her and not a single one of them backed her. So you kind of get the impression, the fact that not one of them came out and said, she's been a great manager, she's done really well at the SSFR. None of them said that. You kind of feel they're all behind Caldwell, and she was put up there, senior player, spokesperson for them, happy to, you know, we're not sure how long she's got left in the team and the squad, I think, when, you know, as in just purely on age. And so maybe she took one for the team and she's put out there that was their kind of, I get the feeling that's the general consensus of them all.
Yeah, and by saying it as well, the reality is it's now unacceptable for them to have a manager that they feel isn't up to scratch. And Diane, as she said in her interview earlier on, was there in 2017 when they had to beg for their own tracksuits and just for better terms and conditions. So she's always used her voice and probably thinks, as you said, she is coming to the end of her career. In a way, she is laying down a marker as well for the team by saying, look, that's what the way it was, and we're not going to take that anymore. And if we do get given that again during this this interview process that you're going to be having for the new the new manager, we're not going to take it. So that's another way of looking at it as well.
Yeah, it is. And I know I saw the reference, but I don't think the two things are the same. I think it was absolutely commendable, and you know what they did going on strike, they had to do that. They had to try and do something to change the way they were seen and the way they were treated in Irish football. They were basically treated as second class citizens when it came to it compared to the men's team. It was disgraceful. And probably the men's team, we should have spoke out and done more about it. You know, it was on our backs as well. But for them to go on strike, that's a very different... I get that.
Subtle.
That was very intense, Marie. Subtle, yeah. But you know what I mean? I think that's a very different statement to make than picking and choosing the manager and tactically what they're going to, because in the end the players can't be in charge of that. They have to get a manager in that they feel is right, that can take the team in the right direction, and if they play for them, they play for them. But it's a national team and they're all going to put the jersey on, they're all going to go out there, and in a major tournament they're never going to let that side down, I don't think. But it's whether or not are they going to change, are the performance levels going to go up. Like, here we have the women's national team who none of them back the manager, but they qualified for a major tournament. It's the most successful women's team in the history of Irish football. We have the men's team who are far removed from qualifying team for anything, and every single one of them seems to back the manager. So just football is just a funny game. Like, it really is. Like, the two teams are so far removed from what their success has been, but yet they have very different opinions on the manager that's in charge of them. It's crazy.
Yeah, anyway, that is crazy. But tell you what is crazy. We haven't got long left in the show. We haven't got near the Premier League. And there's Michael there who's a Brighton and Hove Albion fan.
Wants to hear what you think. Might I add, Ruby wants to keep his fans happy as well here now.
My fans happy, yeah. Look, United were woeful, but watching it all at the weekend and watching it again this morning, Brighton, Spurs, City, Liverpool, they seem to be playing a different game, and Arsenal, to the rest of the Premier League.
It is, isn't it? You know what? It's exciting. It's on the edge of your seat stuff. They're flowing. The pace they play at. The confidence. I think what I can't go over, like, Pep has always had his players were uber confident, supremely talented, unbelievable talent. But they were confident, and no matter what they did, he'd go and he'd instill that into them. Brighton have that about them now. Brighton play like Real Madrid. Brighton are playing like they're a team that have won every Champions League for the last 10 years. They're sensational to watch. Tottenham are at a level where they're playing where their confidence is just through the roof. Even with Charleston getting on the goal scored and keep going, like, they dominate that game. They should have won it well before those minutes, but they were. But you know, the one to take away from this is that Brighton second goal. You're watching it from start to finish. It's just it's just brilliant to watch. Sorry for that, Ruby, but it really is.
No, there's five teams in the Premier League that are playing a different game to the rest of them. They're just at a different level.
And I think that what the thing is about, right? Look at prime example. Look at Danny Welbeck for Brighton.
Yeah.
And you look at him as a player. Like, he was on the scrap heap. Like, when was it Watford he was at when he left and came, and now he looks like, for their last goal, offered, was it his first goal? He drops in, sets it off, spins, little touch around the corner, and then he's in the box to finish off. And you're going, like, this is a player who, when you talk about rejuvenating someone's career and making them feel like they're at top of the world, that's the prime example of what a good manager can do for you. It's amazing.
Well, it's a pity Colley isn't here, because it's obviously not Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's fault. But he's going to discuss it tomorrow night with Marie.
He will be here tomorrow. Stephen, we're going to have to say goodbye to you. We didn't get to the Premier League that much because of the conversation we had about the women's national team, but we will get to it tomorrow night. Alan Colley is in studio. Of course, there is a return of the Champions League as well. Stephen, thank you so much for coming on.
Cheers, guys. Thanks.
Talk to you soon. We'll also get to the golf. We didn't get to today as well because of those player interviews that came about that we weren't expecting to be so controversial. So Remy Burns will look back at the weekend's golf. Ruby, you won't be here. You're going racing.
I'm going to Listowel, Marie, tomorrow for the third day of the Harvest Festival.
Right.
Anything National
we
Wednesday. So
look out for.
Off Flacard tomorrow. Very competitive. Kerry National. I think Stumptown could win the Kerry National.
Okay, I have written that down. Okay, Ruby, thank you so much.
Cheers,
enjoy Listowel. I'll be back tomorrow. Betty De Silva's up next.
RTE 2FM.